Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 19. I'm Rob Wright, editor of Cert Security, and I am here in the studio alone right now. We have a special episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast. We did an interview recently with James Plouffe of MobileIron. He is the lead solutions architect at MobileIron, a mobile security firm that does enterprise mobility management, mobile device management software. And the company recently had a report called their Mobile Security and Risk Review. It was released last month, and it detailed some unsettling findings about all the things that enterprises were not doing to address mobile threats and to improve mobile security. I believe the company, when it announced the report, the headline was, "Enterprises Complacent in the Face of Rising Mobile Threats." And that's, I would say that's based on the report, that's pretty accurate. And so I sat down with James for a discussion initially at Black Hat last month in Las Vegas. And we had a follow-up conversation, a follow-up interview just recently, where we sat down and talked about some of the threats and issues that were affecting enterprises in terms of mobile security, and took a hard look at the things that they were not doing. And we also discussed James's role as a technical advisor on Mr. Robot, the hit TV show. And he had a lot of interesting things to say about how that show sort of achieves its level of technical authenticity and portrays gives an accurate portrayal of information security and hacking. So let's take a listen to my interview with James Plouffe of MobileIron. I know we talked a lot at Black Hat. We talked about the mobile threats report. I think I asked you this in Las Vegas, but were you shocked when you, I guess, saw the information that was in that report about what wasn't being done? I think you guys at the MobileIron had titled it, the release, "Enterprises Complacent in the Face of Rising Mobile Threats." I could think of a more negative term than complacent. But were you surprised?
I was, actually. And I think that was the big shocker. I mean, the thing that I think caught all of our attention when we started to look at the data was some mobile threats are extremely sophisticated. So right before we spoke at Black Hat, the Godless malware dropped, and the Hummingbat actually was the other one that dropped about the same time, and both of those had rootkit exploits in them. So it was sort of the first kind of time we've seen Android malware make an attempt at doing device compromise over the air, which is kind of interesting. And so we sort of expect a little bit of lag time on some of these more sophisticated threats, but some of the very kind of basic stuff, exactly what you alluded to with, like, maintaining OS updates is a very simple and free thing that you can do that protects you a lot of the time. Even this, the most recent revelation about the Pegasus iOS malware, yep. Right? Like, that was kept under wraps for a little while. Everybody did a pretty good job with responsible disclosure and turning around solutions very quickly. Apple issued a patch in what feels like a really quick turnaround, like 10 days, right? And it's one of those things that, like, it was just startling that some of that basic stuff wasn't getting done. And, you know, I wonder whether it isn't just, well, I think there's two things kind of at play. One, mobile still sort of is an evolving discipline in a lot of organizations. And so in a lot of cases, certainly not all, but some, it's almost a second class IT citizen. And so, you know, it doesn't have the same level of maturity that, say, desktop management might. And then the other interesting dynamic, just anecdotally, that I've encountered talking to folks in different places, like at Black Hat, at Cisco Live a couple weeks before that, like, more than one customer actually used the phrase verbatim, "We're just sticking our heads in the sand," which was astonishing to me also. It was sort of like they knew there was a problem, but if they would acknowledge it, it would just go away. Like, and so that, I think, sort of shed a little bit of light on the data as well, that, you know, people are just sort of hoping it won't catch them. But I think, as we've seen with anything in security, that's an inevitability, right?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that they're admitting that is pretty surprising.
Yeah, it was, and again, it's, you know, also surprising in the sense that, you know, it's obviously self-serving for me as a MobileIron employee to say this, but I mean, MDM's not a new technology. It itself is fairly mature at this point. Mm-hmm. And so it's surprising that folks would just sort of be like, yeah, we have mobile stuff going on, but we're leaving it in the line of business, or, you know, IT's not handling that. It just feels very weird.
Do you think that BYOD plays a factor into this? That a lot of times, you know, you're in enterprise organizations and they have a BYOD policy where the employee is using a personal device. And yes, there may be security measures or policies on those devices, but they're almost held at arm's length. Like there's almost a perspective that it's not really their problem, the enterprises, I mean.
Well, I certainly think that could be a factor. One of the other things that I've kind of encountered, again, more anecdotally, is that it seems like a lot of BYOD programs were driven by cost, with security as a secondary consideration. Mm-hmm. But I think any organization that is saying, look, it's somebody else's device, so it's not really our problem, if it's accessing your corporate data, it absolutely is your problem. Because, you know, as an organization, you're the custodian of that stuff. And so it does, like the question of residency, whether you own the endpoint it's on or not, I think should be less relevant to them. It's how do we protect our data and our, you know, by extension, potentially our, you know, customers, clients, whatever data, as it moves around, wherever that is. And that, again, comes back to the technology for doing a lot of that stuff is actually fairly mature at this point, whether you're talking about the capabilities that Apple's built into iOS or the things that Google and Samsung have done with Android for Work and Knox, respectively. You know, there's a lot of ways to make sure that you can still control the flow of data, even though you might not own the endpoint where it ultimately lands.
And what are some of the other things that you've seen from enterprises? I mean, besides sort of the general sticking their head in the sand, not doing updates, are there other sort of specific problems or bad practices or just errors that they're making with regularity that's putting them at risk?
We saw a fair number of customers with missing devices. So about 40% of our customers had devices that had gone AWOL. When you look at stuff like the CIS top 20 critical controls, you know, one of the things they expect you to be able to do is know the location of your assets. And so, I mean, that's a discipline that should transfer, I think, very naturally from kind of the laptop management to the mobile device, although we have to acknowledge that mobile devices are more portable, right? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we did see instances of scenarios where about 26% of our customers had users who were removing the MDM profile. Now, I want to emphasize that that was the percentage of customers, not the percentage of devices. When you look at the device fleet, it's less than a tenth of a percent that of the overall devices that were affected. But, I mean, that's one of those things where you actually have employees overtly sort of bypassing the security measures. And there are actually a number of other reasons why that might have occurred, like lifecycle management stuff. I got a new phone, so I took management off my old device, put it on my new one, et cetera. But things like that where, you know, that kind of goes back to your question about BYOD and is BYOD creating some of these issues. And I think that's a scenario where that's something that organizations have to maybe revisit. Like, they were thinking about BYOD purely from a cost perspective, but if it's BYO, I always have the ability to opt out of the controls my employer might put on my device. Whereas if an organization goes for more of a corporate-owned, personally-enabled scenario, then there are steps you can take to make sure that the device is always under management and you know, that and get extra measures of control as well.
Yeah, so the total number of devices that were being affected by somebody bypassing the MDM was low, but it was a problem that it was affecting a lot of organizations.
No, right,
a lot,
right.
A lot. I mean, I guess 26%, it's not that many. But
well, and I think what caught our attention about that was that it was a big spike from the last time we ran this report. So we did this report in Q4 of 2015, and it was only about 5% of organizations that were affected at then. And so we had this kind of, you know, weird hockey stick thing, right?
Where, oh, wow. Yeah.
It was a much larger percentage of organizations, and it was a pretty steep jump from the last time we looked at it. So again, there are a lot of factors that may contribute to that number, but it definitely got our attention.
What's the message then to enterprises when you see this type of data and you see these trends, you see, you know, the increase in number of people and number of companies being affected by employees removing the MDM from their devices? How do you get them to take these things more seriously and to get their heads out of the sand?
Well, I think that's been the difficult part. And I think you and I talked a little bit about this in Las Vegas, that folks, I think, sort of wrongly point back at things like the Verizon Data Breach Investigations report that says, hey, there haven't been any big breaches attributed to mobile. And so they're sort of like, it's not really a problem, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think the point is, we haven't had one of those events, so people don't necessarily kind of freak out, but they're sort of forgetting that you don't really want to have that event, right? You don't want that headline. You certainly don't want to be that headline.
Right.
I think that's always been the perennial struggle with any kind of security stuff, that we're better at sort of reacting to it than we are being proactive. And that's a little bit of a liability. So I think, you know, there are definitely folks out there that are taking it seriously. But the other thing I always tell folks, like when I'm at different conferences and whatever, is mobile is going to happen with you or to you. And so you have to figure out, you know, how you want to handle that. And the reality is that if you don't want these devices in your environment, there's some things you have to do. Like, you have to play pretty aggressive defense against them, because they are easy to sneak in. And there's a lot of ways, you know, if I'm only protecting my Wi-Fi with username and password, well, I know what my username and password are, and so I can bring my device in and hop on a network very easily. And I've seen that happen to folks, that, you know, we're doing kind of these assessments where we're working with our NAC partners, and we have scenarios where the endpoint count on the network is 40% higher than what the network admins thought it was when you start doing the device profiling, and the overwhelming majority are smart devices. And people are like, well, we didn't expect that. And you're like, well, what were you doing to keep them out? So you either have to play aggressive defense if you don't want this stuff in, or if you are willing to embrace it, you really need to sit down and think through all the implications, because there are a lot of things, again, coming back to just fairly basic and readily available mature technologies that can help you embrace this stuff safely, but you have to be prepared to do that. And it is a little bit different animal than traditional endpoint management, but that doesn't mean that you can't do it right.
Do you feel like, looking back at Black Hat, I mean, there was a lot of talk there about mobile threats, mobile malware, hacks, that was at least helping the conversation, making it harder for enterprises to keep their head in the sand about this stuff?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And I think if Black Hat didn't help advance that, certainly all the news we've seen just recently about Pegasus is going to draw a lot of attention to that, because there are indications based on some of what Lookout has published that Pegasus has actually been in the wild for almost 3 years,
right?
Because there are sort of things referencing code that would have been in iOS 7. And so I think you know, obviously Pegasus is a specialty case and it has specific targets, but, you know, at $25,000 a crack, some people are worth that amount to attack, right? So I think as we see the level of sophistication increase, I mean, the other thing that we've seen with all of sort of these security issues over time, for better or worse, is they also get more democratic, right? Like they get more widely spread, more people are able to use them, and it requires less technical sophistication. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this is kind of a sit up and take notice moment that will help people sort of acknowledge that that there's work to be done.
What about silver linings? I mean, on the good news side, what do you have there? What can we sort of hang our hats on and say, well, at least this is happening, or this is getting better, or you know, we have this to look forward to in terms of mobile threats?
Well, I think the good news is that the OS vendors are really starting to take this very seriously. Mm-hmm. So when we kind of look at the snapshot of our report, you know, in the preceding quarter, Apple and Google both dropped 3 security patch updates in that time. And so I think one of the great things that has happened is you see folks being very responsive to these threats. Like folks like Apple and Google are betting big on what these things mean for enterprises, and they need them to be secure, and so they're taking the threats very seriously. I mean, I think you're seeing a lot of other folks, like the Lookouts of the world, kind of bringing extra value, looking for that stuff. And so I think we're positioning ourselves better to be able to address these things in a more timely fashion, and I think that's probably the big upside.
So some good news.
Yes, definitely.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I guess I would say that right now we still can't point to a major breach that we can attribute directly to mobile. And so hopefully we'll keep that going, right? And I think we have, I mean, eventually we'll lose the cat and mouse game at some point, because you can't play 1,000 ball. But that's the other good news, that we're ahead of the game, and I think we're taking the right steps to kind of hopefully stay there. And I think the other kind of interesting dynamic to some of the other breaches that are out there that you might attribute to mobile, like the celebrities and stuff, it really came down to password reuse, right?
Right.
So it wasn't even necessarily the device getting compromised. It was just, you know, bad upkeep of your accounts. And I mean, we've seen that happen a lot. It happened with GoToMyPC. We just saw, you know, from Dropbox earlier this week, the disclosure that, yes, maybe some passwords were disclosed. So,
yeah, that could happen anywhere.
Right, right.
Yeah. So you had mentioned MDM previously. Where do you see that going with you know, the move to enterprise, you know, mobility management, EMM?
Well, I think it's part and parcel of the same thing. I think, you know, we sort of look at broadening our scope. So MDM's really about turning knobs on devices, and I think there's definitely certain problems you can address in that space. But when you look at, like, EMM, you start to look at what sort of interesting things you can do with application management, and so that comes down to both, you know, sort of the deployability of it, but also securing the applications, because really MDM was the precursor to a lot of the problem that you were really trying to solve, right? It was an apps and data question from day one, but the only way you could deal with it was really by turning knobs on the device. Now we're starting to get more granularity around what we can do with the applications and so forth. And so I think a lot of it will focus more directly on that type of thing.
So you are working on the television show Mr. Robot as a technical consultant, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
So how did you get involved in this?
Well, I'll skip right to the moral of the story, which is be nice to your interns because they might work in Hollywood one day. So one of the guys who's a staff writer on the show and who you've probably actually seen in some of the news lately, Cora Donna, his official title is staff writer and tech producer. I happened to bump into him actually in LAX, and we'd always kept in touch, you know, since he'd been an intern. He had moved out to LA to kind of do his thing, but I hadn't seen him in a while. And he was like, hey, I've got something going, and would it be all right if I called you if it comes together? And I was like, well, yeah, man, you know how it is. You can always call me. And so he did one day, and he was like, so you're on here's what I've got going, and you're on speakerphone with the writer's room. And I was like, all right, well, that's a lot of pressure, but okay. And so his particular passion and how he kind of got connected with Sam Esmail, the producer and head writer of Mr. Robot, was that he always wanted to see technology depicted more realistically in television. And that's an idea that Sam is very much on board with. And so when they started kind of mapping out the first season, they had a couple of tech consultants working, of which I was one. And so they would call to make sure that the things that they were putting into the show made sense to people who worked in technology and were more or less plausible. That's kind of the Cliff Notes version of how it all came together.
And I'm sure you obviously know the show's gotten a lot of great reviews, and it's been lauded particularly for its its accuracy and the level of detail. I mean, I've finally finished the first season. I was late to it, unfortunately, but you know, starting off with the first scene of the first episode where the main character Elliot Alderson's talking about Tor and the coffee shop owner running a secret, you know, website on the side. I mean, I thought that was pretty impressive. Were you surprised that level of detail was actually in the show and that they got it right?
I was actually, because it's interesting that you bring up the pilot, because that was actually written and shot well before my involvement with the show. And so, I mean, if you look in there, there's a couple of flubs. I think there's an IP address that has 5 octets, and an IP address that starts with a 3, you know, like it's 300 something. But so minor little goofs. And it's the sort of thing that, you know, to the uninitiated, it kind of sails right by, right? And that's fine. But it's also not so glaring as some of the things that you see, like, in, you know, pick your favorite hacking movie, because most of them do it wrong, right?
Sadly, yes.
So I was surprised by that, and what I found interesting kind of going into it is, like, they were very serious about it from day one. The writing staff didn't need encouragement to go down that path. Like, they were shooting for authenticity right out of the gate. And so, you know, when you would talk through different scenarios with them, and they'd be like, well, like, you know, is that how it would really happen? At some point, you would have to remind them that they were trying to tell a story, and that if, you know, if you actually did it in the real amount of time certain things would take, it would be tediously boring, and the show would be 8 hours long. And so you'd have to say, you know, you have jump cuts at your disposal. Take advantage of those.
Right,
you know,
right.
But they were always, from very early on, like, we want to make sure that we get this right. And I think, you know, one of the other interesting things that they do that I don't know how much this gets discussed, but their computer effects are practical. So in a lot of shows, you know, when people are interacting with a screen, it's actually green screen, and they go in and animate after the fact. They actually have animators building the stuff, so the actors have to interact with the keyboard to make something happen, and they shoot that basically live rather than doing the green screen after, which I think is really interesting, because I know that it's got to be a pain in the neck for the actors and the staff. Like, I know working with Core, he's called me up super late at night sometimes being like, you need to help me put this screenshot together because we got to shoot this scene tomorrow and I have to tell Rami how to do it. So you know, and I know I'm not the only one he calls for those sort of things.
Sure.
So it's really interesting, but it's been very gratifying as well.
You know, going back to your point about getting enterprises to recognize what's going on, like something like this in its own small part you must feel like it's at least putting it out there that, hey, this is happening and there are information security threats and they need to be taken seriously, and look at what can happen when you don't take it seriously.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case. And when I compare it to kind of other stuff in that vein, like, well, it's probably not fair to say that TSI Cyber is exactly the same vein, but like when you look at shows like that where their representation of information technology and information security in particular can feel so disconnected from reality. A coworker of mine sent me a GIF from CSI Cyber where it's like two people over the keyboard, like typing on so four hands on one little keyboard, and it was sort of like, the faster we can type, you know, the more likely we can stop this threat or whatever. And I think that sort of the liability with that is it makes, like, that doesn't even look realistic to a person who doesn't know any better, right?
Right.
And so it just separates that whole conversation about, oh, this stuff's just weird, wacky magic that like six nerds in the world do. And it's not. I mean, we've seen that information security has become sort of the new domain of organized crime. And so it's very important that we get on top of this stuff. And if Mr. Robot and its depiction helps that happen, then certainly I can feel good about that.
And last question for you. Would you say that, you know, having worked on the show and worked in for as long as you have in sort of the security field, are you as paranoid, for lack of a better term, as Elliot Alderson, or?
I'm probably not quite as paranoid as him, and I am maybe, sometimes I wonder if I'm as paranoid as I should be, but I try to take a fundamentally optimistic view of the world, and so I realize that we all could be targets, but I do try to sort of, you know, I don't reuse my passwords. I do change them with some degree of frequency. So I try to do sort of the basic hygiene stuff to be a safe citizen on the internet at any rate. But maybe I'm not paranoid enough.
I think you're probably okay. That sounds like like you're doing enough. And maybe that level of paranoia is probably unhealthy given what we've seen on the show. So
yeah, fair point.
Yeah. Well, James, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. And your insights on the show and mobile security have been great.
My pleasure. And if you need anything in the future, just give me a holler. I'm happy to chat.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.